As we look at lesson 7, the title is Those Who Put God First in Their Lives. Now remember, if you will look back in the beginning of the book, who's on the Lord's side? Well, this is an answer to that question. Who's on the Lord's side? Those who put him first. A lot of people are familiar with Matthew 6:33. He does reference this passage in this particular lesson, plus a lot of other things. But before we get to the lesson, I do want to make this point. What we're going to look at tonight is, in many ways, absolutely contrary to what a lot of people believe and think when it comes to religion. What are some of the common, when we talk about spiritual things, what's the common attitude, or what are some of the common attitudes that we get from people? Here's an example. Well, I have a church. I have a church home. What else do we hear?
And we believe.
All right. You know, we've got these beliefs. Somebody says, well, you know, I read the Bible, or I know that I can get access to a Bible study, or this, that, and the other thing. Anybody ever talk to somebody who says, I'm seeking God first in my life? Out of all the people that I have met, I have never, maybe somebody feels like that's bragging, but I've never met somebody out of all the religious conversations I've had say, this is my passion, this is my life, this is the most important thing. Now, sometimes in the church and outside the church, you can see people who seem to demonstrate that, but as far as a person who says that, just very, very rare. And yet that is what we see in the Old Testament. It's also what we see in the New. And when a lot of people don't head in that direction, they're on the wrong road. Okay, page 38, again, lesson 7. He goes back to the Old Testament, Exodus chapter 20, verse 3. And we will ask somebody to be lined up for Exodus 20, verse 5 as a helper for our first passage. Exodus 20, verse 5. Scott, okay. He begins by saying, when God told the Jewish people, Exodus 20, verse 3, thou shalt have no other gods before me. He stated he gave a principle which encompasses more than we may wish to recognize. It's a principle that's just as binding today as it was in the days of Moses and the Israelites. Verse 5 states the reason and for giving this law. And Scott, if you want to go ahead and read that passage.
Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, making the iniquity of the fathers upon the children,
all right, thank you. What's the answer to the question? For I, the Lord thy God, I am a jealous God. Well, you know, when we think about jealousy today, can you think of some examples? I'll give you one. We have in our household, two animals, a dog and a cat. And, you know, the dog gets something and the cat's jealous. Cat gets something and the dog is jealous. One gets petted and the other's jealous. I mean, it's just, there's always this back and forth. And you see it with kids sometimes. You know, well, she got or he got. They got. And I didn't get. But aside from animals and aside from young people, where else do we see jealousy? All right. You see marriages. Sometimes people say, well, you know, look at what they have. And it could be in the area of possessions. It could be in the area of skills. It could be in all kinds of areas. So marriage would be one example. Anything else?
Job.
All right, sometimes people are jealous when it comes to jobs. They get the easier work, they get the better work, they get the less hazardous work, they get better paid for the work, they get the choice of hours, they get the choice of shifts. Jealousy there. What else?
Neighbors.
All right, friends and neighbors. So a lot of the relationships that we have with people. So jealousy is a big part of life, and it's really, you know, people say, you know, this is something that I deserve, sometimes it's something I want. But in the case of God saying, I'm a jealous God, it's not a bad thing. It's a way of saying what? If you want to serve me, it needs to be what kind of relationship? It needs to be an exclusive relationship. It needs to be one where there is great commitment. So the author rightly says this law required God's people to put him first. And not only first, but always. Think a person can put God first sometimes. But not always. Yeah. Think about the person who says Sunday morning, between 11 and 12, work can call, blood, it's not going to matter. 11 to 12 belongs to God. Well, that's good. But what about the other 6 days and the other part of Sunday? So when we think about serving God first, that's half of it. But the other half is serve Him first on an ongoing basis. He then mentions God has not changed. We still have the same principle today. He's still a jealous God, quote unquote, and he still is demanding, he requires that his people put him first in their lives. So an important principle for all time. Any thoughts on that first paragraph? Okay. Paragraph number two. He says, our service to the Lord, our service to God comes on a first or not at all basis. Now think about that. We sometimes hear people say this is a take it or leave it deal. In other words, if you want it, this is what you get. This is what you have to give to get this item. And if you don't want it, there's not going to be any bargaining. There's not going to be any kind of alteration. I mean, it is this or nothing. Well, does God make that kind of deal with us? He does. He says, here's the deal. Here's the arrangement. And I hope I've done everything that I can do to make it attractive to you, and I hope that you will take it. But in a lot of respects, people say, well, we want to go ahead and change the arrangement a little bit. We're not quite satisfied with this or that, so let's go ahead and alter it a bit, and then we'll take a look at it and see if we want it. He says, in a glance at some of the lives of his loyal servants, a few of them, is proof enough that these people really, really strove to please the Lord. And we've looked at some of these characters before. One of the passages we looked at within the last couple of weeks, but we'll still make brief mention of it as well. And when you look at these Bible characters, God put them in the Word for a reason. And one of the reasons seems to be God, as he talks about this commitment, he says, here are some people that typify, here are some people that reflect this kind of commitment. So you may not be building the altars like some of the Old Testament characters did, and you're not going to be building an ark like Noah did, and you're not going to be doing some of the things that Job did. But still, in your life, in your walk, you need to do your very best to serve me and serve me on a regular basis. Again, anything that you want to discuss before we pick up with some of our examples? Noah's first. He goes back to Genesis 6, verse 5, but if you want to read this passage, I'm going to ask you to read out through verse 8. Genesis 6, verses 5 through 8. Who'd like to be a helper? Betty?
And the God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And he repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creepy things and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made him. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord.
Thank you. Let's fill in our blanks. Genesis 6, 5, he says, we have a picture of Noah's environment. God saw man's wickedness, and it was great. Well, part of the reason was it wasn't in just one select area. It was throughout the earth. In the earth, or on the earth, how many imaginations and thoughts of the heart? Every. All. Now, you think that's literally true? You think 24/7, everywhere in the earth. You know, even the bad people never had a decent thought. I don't think that's literally true. I mean, you would think that, you know, if there was a birthday celebration or something, mom could, you know, love her child or, you know, pet the dog or something. So not literally true in the absolute sense, but it's a way of saying that when you look at these people, they are filled with corruption, they are overflowing with wickedness, and this is something that they had really dedicated themselves to. So hyperbole and exaggeration for emphasis, but it was so bad that the earth was destroyed. In the midst of all this wickedness, Noah found what?
Grace.
He found favor. And then we have a reason for that. One of the reasons was, when it comes to his family, you know, what did he try to do? Tried to lead them, tried to teach them. He was a good man as far as finding respect in the hearts of his family, and also tried to lead his family in the right way. Then the author asked this question, would it not be wonderful if every God-fearing man today would try to save his family? Now that's sad. There are some people today, and Paul talks about this when he wrote to Timothy, there are some that will not provide for their own families, and that's really, it's beyond unfortunate. I mean, it's wrong. It's a terrible thing. But what about the person that's not willing to try to save their own family? Now, sometimes the man fails and the wife tries to step up to the plate, and sometimes vice versa. But still, if we are an adult in a family situation, that should be our first point of emphasis. We want to do our best to save our own family. Then he says, and this is also worthy of attention, Noah lived in a day when everyone else's family was lost. And one of the points that we should try to pay attention to in our life is that's something that we want to try to make sure doesn't happen in our case. You know, we want to save as many people as we can, but we also want to spend as much time and effort with our family to make sure that we try to save them as well. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with the latter section? Okay. He says, let's not leave Noah quite yet. Let's consider two great truths which show or reveal the kind of man he was. He cites 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 5. And then we'll keep somebody, okay? Keep somebody back there in the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 6, he mentions verse 22 and also 7:5, but the passages are virtually identical. So we'll just take a Genesis 6:22 reader, and that's going to be Scott. All right, Molly, if you will, 2 Peter 2, verse 5. You think a preacher can be a preacher of all kinds of things? Would you necessarily have to be a preacher of righteousness? No. You can be a preacher of... What about a preacher of the social gospel? You think there are any of those characters today? Sure. You think there are some preachers that have nothing to say but gloom and doom? Yeah. And then you've got the preacher who is the preacher of... Well, you've got the preacher of false doctrine. We didn't mention him, but as far as alluding to people, he would be important to include. And then you've also got the preacher of righteousness. You know, here is the right way to live. Here is the right way to serve God. Well, going back to what we said from Genesis 6, the thoughts, the imaginations of people were evil how long? Continually. You think they wanted to hear any preaching? Probably not. And it would have made Noah a very, very unpopular man. And yet, this man, as you think about him trying to teach people, and, you know, who knows what happened to him. Maybe he had fruit thrown at him. You know, maybe he was, you know, chased out of his community. Maybe the shopkeepers didn't want to talk to him. Whatever he faced, you've got him for, you know, year after year after year, decade after decade. What's he still doing? He's still trying to teach the people. I'm not sure that... You know, I would have done nearly as well. Maybe I would have been discouraged after the first, you know, year or 6 months or 10 years or 50 years or 75 years. You know, I might have quit. So when we think about someone who is willing to seek the kingdom of God, I mean, this guy qualifies. And then when we look at our lives, we have to say, well, you know, okay, we're not quite in that same situation. Our circumstances are different. But am I really in my life trying to seek and serve God to use my talents and my abilities to the best of my ability? You know, sometimes we say, well, I don't want to be compared against him. You know, you take, for example, a fifth grade track runner, and you put him up against a guy who's just won, you know, 3 gold medals in track. Well, you want to be that fifth grader? I mean, he's going to smoke you on the track. So when we think about spiritual things, it's really a little discomforting to think about some of the great Bible characters, and not that we have to match them, you know, point for point, but, you know, here's some people that we can go back and look at. We can see that they were really trying to do what's right, and they should motivate us to be as committed to do as well as we possibly can for God. Stan? Well, and that's exactly right. In Matthew 12:30, he said, "He that is not with me is against me." So today, apathy, lukewarmness, very, very popular in the world. And that goes back to how we introduce things. Well, I'm a Christian. I have a Bible. I have my church, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just one of many things that people kind of have on the calendar. Let's show up from time to time. And yeah, maybe we'll open the Bible and read it a little bit. But as far as really being committed, oh, no. But the Lord said, if you're not in this group, you're in the other. And apathy, that lukewarmness is a huge, I'd say it's one of the leading issues that we have in the religious area today. Just, I mean, it's a sad time to live in, but this is where we find ourselves. Anybody else before, okay, John?
I don't know if I'm going off the but like, say if, like, you got a person, a man, he committed a crime to a little Mm-hmm. But then we as society, as Christians, you know, we could God and forgive them, but then as Christian individuals, as us, you know, we could like say, well, we can forgive them too, but then if they like, when you said that's apathetic, why do they seem like they can't live in a society and they take their own lives?
Okay, let's get that last part again. You used a couple pronouns there. Repeat that last part for me again. You're talking about when they, I'm not sure who the they are.
Like say, yeah, I committed a crime.
Okay.
And, you know, I had to be registered as a
offender. Okay.
And say, you know, as society, you know, I was still going to church, and, you know.
Right.
God forgive me. He forgave me for what I did.
Sure.
But then as my own individual, I was, you know, where I am, I can't really live with myself, and I take my life.
Okay. Well, when you, I don't know that I would necessarily relate that to apathy. I think you have there some misguided zeal. You know, when we talk about commitment to Christ, that's right. But sometimes people can be very zealous in some other areas. And it's kind of interesting how people, you find sometimes some Christians, they get, you know, and certainly some non-Christians, they become very involved in something. I mean, when you look at some of the issues, well, did you hear what, you know, what this politician is doing, or, you know, they want to, you know, rework this street or whatever it is. And sometimes people just get the wrong focus. In that particular case, you have a situation, a person has become consumed, so focused on an activity in his past, rightly or wrongly. In some cases, they're focused on something that actually happened, and in some other cases, people focus on things that, you know, are not legitimate. And in this particular case, they should have turned that energy to, you know, staying focused on God and pursuing the kingdom, but they just couldn't get over the guilt. And in that particular case, they decided, well, there's only one way out, and that's to go ahead and end things, and sometimes suicide is the result for that. But in those cases, that's where, and you know, the devil's good about that. We have talked about in Revelation chapter 12, remember, one of the things that's said by John, the devil is not only the dragon, but he's also the what of the brethren? He is the accuser. Remember that? So a lot of times, you know, the devil likes to do that. People sometimes do that to themselves, but that attention has to be refocused. It has to be shifted back into the right way. But a lot of times people really get off that particular track. Anybody else before we pick up with Scott in Genesis 6, 22? Okay.
Thus did Noah, according to all that God had commanded him, so did he.
Imagine if we were talking with someone this week. They said, well, you know, I believe the Bible, I go to church. And we asked them this question, do you do all that the Bible commands? Average guy in the street, how do you think he'd respond to that question? Or average woman? I think they just kind of step back and say, where did that come from? I've never thought of it. Are you crazy? Because their view of Christianity, for the most part, the average guy, the average woman out there on the street is what? God's going to take whatever little bit I throw his way. You know, time, money, you know, worship, whatever it is. I'm going to have some involvement with that, keep my name in the roll, and when the time comes up to be received up into glory, I'm going to be up there, you know, with the group. And yet if people went back and looked at the scriptures, that's not the message that we find. Not from very early in the Bible with Noah, and certainly not with the man named Abraham. Genesis 12 is where we go next. He mentions Abraham and says every Bible student knows a little something about this great servant of God. A number of responses to God's call show convincingly that he decided to put God first in his life. From Genesis 12, he says, we learn of his call to leave his home country. Just what did God say to him in verse 1? Anybody ready? Genesis 12, verse 1. Molly?
Now the Lord had said unto Abraham, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee.
All right. As I was thinking about this, when I was going through the material, I thought, you know, Hurricane Sandy, you've got some people that basically lost everything, at least their homes and their furnishings. And yet, as bad as that was, you still have some people camped out there. It's winter. They're in maybe some tent city, maybe no relatives in the area, maybe no job, but it's kind of like, hey, this is our home, and we're not willing to leave, even though everything that we own practically has been washed away. people are sometimes like that. And in other disasters, you find people, remember down there, you know, New Orleans and, you know, Hurricane Katrina, all that, a lot of people wanted to stay. So for a lot of people, the idea of leaving home, we can't do that. You know, guy says to the girl, hey, I want to marry you, let's move. Well, okay, you know, two doors down from mama, there's a house, let's buy it. And he says, no, I'm thinking out of state. Are you kidding me? Another guy says, out of the country. No way. Can you imagine Abraham? God says, I don't want you to move across town. I don't want you to go out of the state. I want you to leave where? Yeah, there's another country that I want you to go to. And are you going to drag all your clan with you? No, your relatives are going to stay behind. You leave your country, you leave your relatives, you leave your father's family, and you trust me to go where I'm going to show you. That's not the American way. But that's seeking first the kingdom of God, being willing to trust God, even though there are some things that may not be all that clear. And I think maybe some older generations did better with this than the newer generations. Things have been trimmed down and toned down a lot, where today a lot of people, when it comes to seeking God and really trying to serve him, in part because of society, it's just, well, let's just kind of throw that in the plate and we'll try to, you know, get that in with you know, all the other weekly activities. And that's just not what we find in the scriptures. Then this point, Genesis 12, verse 4. You still there, Molly?
Yes.
Okay, fourth verse.
So Abraham departed, as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran.
Okay, now people did live longer in this day and time, and I guess you could argue that the genetic situation was probably a good bit better than what we have now. But, you know, still, after how many years? 75 years, you've got a little mileage on the feet. And when we think about, you know, were they able to go down and call U-Haul or Penske and say, bring the truck down? I mean, if you're going to move and you're going to go to another country, it's going to be tough. And when you go back and you begin to look at the area where Abraham lived and where he went, you know, just like today, when you start crossing borders, is every country friendly? No. You remember the guy not too long ago that ended up in the Mexican prison? He thought he had authority to take an old shotgun across the border. Well, the Mexican officials didn't quite see it that way, and he ended up in the clink for a while. When you go back and you look at where Abraham was going and the countries that he was dealing with, they were not friendly people. I mean, they were very hostile people. So, once again, you know, not in his teens, not in his 20s, you know, like I say, he had some mileage on him, and yet God said, now it's time for you to go. Then, this point from verse 7, unto thy seed will he give this land. And he built what? We should be able to fill in the blank if we didn't already. He built an altar unto God. So, in addition to going at the age that we've described and doing everything else, he also builds an altar to God. So, you almost get the picture that, okay, there are all these various things, and how many does he leave undone? Not one. He says, my life, I'm going to use it as fully. I'm going to use it as extensively as I possibly can for you, God. That's why he's a great example. Anything that you want to touch base on before we pick up with the next paragraph? Stan?
Back to the leaving the country and leaving the family, et cetera, et cetera. It's just kind of a comment as much as anything. But many people today will pick up and go across state lines or across several state lines or whatever for a new job. But if something happens to the congregation that they're worshiping with wherever they're at, they won't move to the next town in order to have a church to worship.
No. No, people still understand motivation, but not necessarily religious motivation. There was a story, Sherman, I know you follow USA Today, you may have seen this from a couple days ago, but and maybe somebody else did too on another news source, but Michigan, you know, they've got the cans, I think you get a dime back in pop cans, and they're now looking at some new laws because they've got people that show up with the pop cans, I mean, in droves. I mean, it's an exaggeration, but it's like they bring the dump truck, you know, into the can exchange center, and they got all those cans from Michigan. And we don't have the rebate here, so, I mean, they go over there and, you know, well, here's our 5,000 cans, and, you know, we want our money back from them. Well, I didn't realize until I read that article that if they pay out more money than the number of cans that came from the place, and they do keep count, but somebody loses some money. And it's a huge, huge problem. But, you know, imagine, and I know some people are not that far from Michigan. We're relatively close, you know, 10, 12 miles, something like that from here. But, you know, still imagine that. You know, you're going out and you're going through trash cans. you're going out and maybe scouring the roadways, trying to find a single can for 10 cents. And then after you get it, you amass all these cans. Some of them are probably dirty. Some of them are probably slimy. I don't know if you can do the same on beer cans or not. But, you know, pop cans can be kind of slimy. You get them, and then you're willing to break the law to go into Michigan, hassle with dumping them off, hassle with, maybe having your picture taken and possibly being prosecuted for a felony, and then after, a few $100, coming back and then doing it again. But people do it. And they're doing it to the degree now where Michigan is trying to go ahead and somehow regulate the process a little bit more and shut it down. So when you look at that kind of thing, are people still dedicated? Yes, absolutely. And you see some other people. There was another article today, the Trayvon Martin situation. It's been about a year since they had that incident in Florida. And you see, and I am very sympathetic with the family that lost their child. But once again, you have that kind of thing where a person loses someone, and what becomes their focus in life? Well, okay, it could be that. I was thinking about vengeance, though. But you have some things like that where a person becomes so focused on that, we've got to get him. We've got to put him behind prisoner. We've got to get the death sentence from him. Well, justice is right, and we're certainly, we should be supportive of that. But still, at the same time, it goes back to what John was saying earlier. You've got all that energy, but where should that energy be focused? God. Seeking first the kingdom. And yes, all these other things have to be done. But the devil is very, very good at getting people off track. And in our culture, he has really sidetracked a lot of folks. One more thing, and then we'll see if there's something that you want to add or ask before we talk about Jacob. One of the great tests of his love for God came when he, this was Abraham, was told to offer his son upon an altar. Genesis 22, verse 2. Like Noah, Abraham wanted his children to honor God and put him first in their lives. And then, anybody already looked at Genesis 18, 19? What compliment is paid to Abraham? God said, I know he's going to do what? He's going to command his children to keep. All right, the way of the Lord, to keep the ways of God. Before Jacob, anything that you want to interject? Question or comment? Okay. Moving to Jacob, Genesis 28. He says here, and this is going to take us to Genesis 28, 12. We'll need a helper lined up for that in just a minute or two. Steve, thank you. We have here an account of what has been called Jacob's letter. On his journey from Beersheba to Haran, Jacob, he spent the night at a certain place using stones for his pillow. And then we come to his dream. That night he saw something. There was a ladder that reached. Steve, if you help us fill in the blanks.
And he dreamed and beheld a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending on it.
Okay. Let's fill in the blanks and then make an observation. The ladder that reached from where to where? All right, we've got top to bottom, earth to heaven, and who or what? All right, we've got the angels. Now, this is kind of an interesting thing. We've got servants of God, and who are Christians supposed to be? Servants of God. What are these angels doing? All right, you think they were a little overweight, going out there and trying to knock off some calories? We've got some fat angels trying to get skinny. Do we think that's why they were going up and down the ladder? No. I mean, they didn't need to lose any weight. Why are they going up and down? Because they are servants of God, and servants of God are to be busy. There were things to do. All right, well, if that happens to be true in the spiritual realm, then guess what? In the secular realm where we live, we should also be busy about spiritual things. So I think there is, it may not be the strongest point, and may not be the absolute best place to go and look at this particular teaching, but I do think that there's an implied lesson there, that we, just like these spiritual creatures, need to be busy in the servants of God. Then he says, after the ladder, above the ladder, rather stood the Lord, extending to Jacob the promise made to Abraham. The land whereupon thou liest, to thee I will give it, and to thy seed. Verse 13. Then from verse 22, show that Jacob determined to put the Lord first in his life. Steve, you still there by chance?
Yes.
Okay. If you read that 22nd verse from Genesis 28.
Then this stone, which I have set for a pillar, shall be God's house, and of all that thou shalt give thee, I will surely give the tenth unto thee.
Okay. 2 points. First of all, what did he set up? This is a
pillar.
All right, this is a pillar. This is a memorial stone. And then he talked about giving, and he said, I'm going to give how much? I'm going to give a tenth. I'm going to give 10%. Now today, when it comes to religious things, a lot of people still like memorials. You would have to go back and look it up on the internet, but a while back, the Bible. Elvis Presley had a Bible. And that Bible was sold at an auction. And it sold for several thousand dollars. I can't remember offhand how many thousands it was, but I mean, it was an expensive Bible. Now, knowing a little bit about Elvis collectors, knowing a little bit about how people think, do you think the guy bought the Bible to read it? I kind of doubt it. You know, he might have just opened it up to see if Elvis had written anything, but more than likely, he bought it as a memento to frame it, put it up on a shelf, and say, look what I have. So today, people still have that same kind of thing. You know, let's have a stone. Let's have a memorial stone, if you will. And that's all good and nice. But at the same time, when you look at Jacob, what else did he do? We've got the stone, but also he made a pledge. There was some personal investment there as well. And this also needs to be true of us. We've got to, as they sometimes say, have some skin in the game. But all too often, people today think, well, you know, that's for this and that one, and I just don't have to be that involved. I've got, you know, my name on the, you know, membership roll. And God says it doesn't work. Chris?
Well, last night on the news, I don't know if somebody may have already said this, but there was a woman, and the newscaster asked her why she did what she did, and she said, because my life may be the only Bible that people ever read. And I just thought, wow.
Probably.
It's so true. It's
Yeah, I don't know if today is the day. I know President Obama honored Rosa Parks. Remember her? Black lady who did all kinds of good and lived to about 90 years of age. Like I say, today may have been the day for her. But anyway, they did have a big celebration for her today in Washington. And, you know, as I think about her, I don't know where she was religiously. You know, given her age, she probably was, you know, at least somewhat spiritually inclined. But you do have some people like that who are in so many ways so kind and so dedicated to doing good, which is a wonderful thing. But yet their focus many times is just on doing good instead of doing good that is in harmony with God's will. Now maybe in her mind she was seeking first the kingdom. I'm not sure. I hope that was the case. But a lot of times it goes back to, you know, once again, John, what you said. People have all that energy. But is it really focused in the right way? And for the Christian, that's something that needs to be done. And our young people, too. It's very, very difficult in the younger years. They're thinking about so many things. They want to go in so many different directions. But that desire, that course, has to be instilled in them. And it may take a little while before it finally, you know, sinks in. You don't find too many young people who are just really, really committed to God. There are some. But generally, if you can go ahead and, like I say, kind of, you know, soak that into the DNA, if you will, very early in life. Then as they get out and they continue to grow, sometimes I think, and this is a difficult thing for preachers. Preachers can work with the congregation, and the same is true for elders. They can be working with the congregation and think, well, we wish we had a bunch of people. The majority of our folks are seeking first the kingdom of God. Well, you know, everybody wants that. But for people to get to that point, doesn't it take a little while? And we say, we want people to be wise. Well, doesn't it take probably a little gray hair before that some of that sets in? It does. There's a learning process. And such is also true in the spiritual realm. But we've got to kind of get on the treadmill and at least be headed in this direction. Otherwise, we're not going to fare very well with it. Anybody want to make a point before we pick up with Josiah, item 4? Okay. Josiah, unlike Noah's and Abraham's children, Josiah did not have a good dad. Now, sometimes people will use that as an excuse. Well, anybody see, and I sent this to Teresa, and she just sent me a note back and said, this is really dumb. But anybody see this the other day? The guy is suing his parents. I sent it to Sherman because of something that he was nice enough to send me today. He's suing his parents because he didn't get enough love. You can look that up on the internet. It was an article from 2 or 3 days ago, and I mean, Teresa had it right, you know, as far as saying it's really dumb. But, you know, guy's 30 years old. Yeah, you also said I think it's dumb, but anyway. I didn't get it all, but I'm pretty sure you said that.
He's dumb around.
Yeah. So, once again, you have a guy here who's focused on that. You know, let's go after mom and dad because, you know, he didn't get the pizza chains that he wanted and some other stuff. But, I mean, it really is a wild email. But that's not an excuse. You know, we may not have had the things that other people had in our life in the early years may not have been good, and we may have suffered some kind of tragedy and trauma and, you know, all kinds of other things. But, you know, sometimes people go through some horrific experiences, but that does not mean, you know, and again, let's go back to Rosa Parks. You know, you look at her, the discrimination that she lived through, you know, she lived through a very, very rough time. And lived in the southern part of the United States when discrimination was just shameful, you know, far beyond shameful. And yet, you know, she rose above it. And I would hope that that was because of religious reasons. She was trying to pursue what was right. I don't know enough about her to make a judgment on that right now. But, you know, we can, and especially from a Christian perspective. Okay, 2 Kings 21, verses 19 and 20. We learn here that Amon, Josiah's father, did that which was, and if you didn't look it up, you should be able to fill in the blank. He did that which was evil, unrighteous in the Lord's sight, as his father Manasseh had done. Despite the poor examples of those before him, Josiah determined to put the Lord first in everything when he became king. So in the book of 2 Kings, chapter 21, or 22, verse 19, it says here that he had a heart, and I'm going to fill in these blanks, and then we'll pick up with verse 25 in the second paragraph. But he had a heart that was tender, and he humbled himself before the Lord. He soon put his energies, and there it is, that point that we've talked about. You know, he had those abilities, and he decided that he was going to put them to work for the Lord. And here are some of the things that he did that we read about from 2 Kings 23. Baal, he decided to go ahead and empty the temples, the vessels associated with this false god, verse 4. And then verse 5, he put down what kind of priests? The idolatrous priests. He got rid of them. And then out there, he took care of the grove from the house of the Lord. He burned it, stamped it out with powder. And then, who were they? The verse 7, broke down the houses of the Sodomites. And then, what did he use? Let's back that up. He stopped people from making their sons and daughters pass through the fire. That was a pagan rite for false gods. He caused the people to keep the Passover. They'd gotten out of the habit of that, verse 21. He put away the workers that were involved with the familiar spirits, and then, of course, the wizards. And then in verse 25 of 2 Kings chapter 22, anybody turn to that chapter? Okay, Scott. 2 Kings 22, verse 25. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, I got it right, but where did we switch to 23 yet? I'm not seeing it in the book. Oh, there it is, chapter 23. I knew I went through it, I just didn't spot it. Okay, so sorry about that. All right, our blanks. He dedicated to God. He dedicated himself to God, and then the quote, like him, there was no king before him. He was unique, he was distinct. That turned to the Lord with how much of his heart? All his heart. And how much of his soul? All his soul. And how much of his might? All his might. Well, doesn't that sound a little familiar? Jesus said, thou shalt love who? The Lord thy God with all thy heart, all thy soul, all thy mind, and you look at all the accounts, all thy strength as well in the New Testament. So he did according to all the law of Moses, and neither after him arose there any like him. As I was looking through this, I thought, you know, it might be interesting when we have a chance to go out to the cemetery and see some of the gravestones. They all vary a little bit. Some of the older ones are, you know, fairly simple as far as person's name, when they died, and when they were born, those kinds of things. But now some of the markers are a little bit bigger, and you have a chance to put, you know, a picture or maybe some other things there. And I thought how interesting it would be if you could have, and maybe even in our electronic age, you know, maybe a little display there that has some information about the folks, and you could just scroll down, you know, what they were dedicated to in life. And if you're able to do that, I think we'd find a lot of things. You know, here was a dedicated cook. Here was a dedicated mechanic. Here was a dedicated factory worker. Here was a dedicated racing fan. Never missed a race. here was a dedicated woodworker. And I mean, you could just go through and see all the things that really caught the attention of folks. And if that were possible, how many do you think we'd find as far as markers that said he was dedicated to God? Probably not very many. Probably very, very few. And yet God says, and it's not wrong to, you know, want to be a good cook and a good worker and a good woodworker and enjoy the races, those kinds of things. But God says, you need to have me, as we mentioned at the beginning, you need to have me first, and you need to have me first 7 days of the week. And stay focused on me and my will. Scott? When you look at the Baal worship, and that was not the only kind of worship, but it was one example of the false worship under the Old Testament. Baal was a fertility god of the land, and the people thought that sexual activity, fornication, would allow the rains to come and for the crops to be fruitful. So, you know, crops, you know, produce and human reproduction, that kind of thing. It was all tied together. And the groves would have been one of the places where, you know, they went for ritual fornication. We see in the New Testament, when we look at the book of Revelation, some of the pagans, they had temples. Acts 19 talks about the temple of Diana. They had 1,000, you know, priestesses there for ritual fornication. So this was kind of the early version of that, out there in the woods and so forth. But yeah, the groves... And the Sodomites, the same kind of thing. It was just a very, very wicked, very, very corrupt society. And when you think about this, I mean, if you're going to go in, we've seen, Washington right now, we've got all kinds of problems there, no matter which side of the political fence that you're on. And we have, I think, on both sides of the aisle, some people sometimes who think that they're going to, be the new elected senator or, congressman, or they're going to get elected president, and then they're going to go in and clean things up. Well, after about the first week in Washington, what do you think that they're thinking? I need some extra shovels. This is going to be a lot harder than I thought. Well, now, granted, you've got some kings that go back there and do that, and, it's kind of a different political system for them, but still, when you're the one guy at the top, and you've got a nation that's involved with the kind of ritual fornication that we described, and I mean, it's a system in place. Is it going to be a tough job to kind of come in and clean house? I mean, it's going to be rough. So when these guys did it, it's, I think, really easy to understand, or at least maybe we can better appreciate the fact that God says, hey, these guys really deserve to be commended. Because there were some people there that would not have been very, very pleased with their activities. And yet, this guy had the kind of attitude that we're talking about tonight. I'm going to seek God. Well, now, when you think about the politician, if he is going in there of his own strength and thinking, I'm going to do this on my own, pretty overwhelming. But, and especially in the Old Testament era, hey, if I'm going to go in and who's going to be on my side? God. Then this is something that can be accomplished. And that needs to be our attitude as well. And that's probably a good place to kind of bring things to a close. When we think about seeking God first, people, I think, sometimes have that idea, well, I'm going to seek God and I'm going to really seek him. But do they turn to God for his help in doing that? I think a lot of people think, well, I'm going to seek God, but I really don't need him, which is kind of odd. I'm going to, kind of seek him and not really depend that he's going to, on him to help me do that. But if we're going to seek him, that's half of it. But we also need to be willing to depend on him to help us accomplish that.